Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for the Doctors Roundtable, a forum for conversations with Atlanta's leading doctors and thought leaders about cutting-edge trends and topics in health, wellness, and lifestyle issues. Here's our host, Tanya Mack.
Good afternoon, everyone, and thanks for tuning in. Hopefully, you've all had a wonderful Christmas, and we're still in the throes of the holidays and just looking forward to New Year's coming and starting a new year. We appreciate you spending time with us. We're going to have a timely subject. A lot of us look at the holidays as a time to spend with family and friends and to the joys of the season, but also the holidays can bring some unwanted guests like stress and depression for adults and kids. And changes occur from year to year. So things that work for us in the past, even positive changes, may be a stressor to us this year. So we're going to be talking about dealing with holiday stress and sadness as our topic today. And I have a very special guest with me. I have Dr. Theodore Morgan from Georgia Behavioral Health. Welcome, Dr. Morgan.
Thanks for having me.
And let me tell you a little bit about Dr. Morgan. He got his medical degree from Meharry Medical College and then went on to complete a psychiatric fellowship at the University of Alabama. He's board certified in child and adolescent and adult psychiatry, and currently he's in private practice treating people of all ages at Georgia Behavioral Health. So welcome.
Thanks again for having me.
So I hope we reach all the right people today, and I hope those of us that are listening that are happy carry some of this conversation into the future from year to year so they can help themselves when the time is appropriate. So the first thing I'd like to talk about is just kind of how you got to this path of your specialty. I know there's always a story behind when physicians get trained where you thought you might have ended up and where you're actually ended up. And right before we went on the air, we were talking about mentoring and kids and kind of your thoughts around that. So tell us how you got to be where you are.
It was really interesting for me because medicine was the last thing I was thinking about. My father is a physician, and I grew up knowing what that involved. He's a family practice trained, and I didn't want to do anything but. And I went to school, and like a lot of college students, was having a little bit too much fun. But one of my saving graces was that it was, part of the scholarship I was on was a requirement to do the MCAT and all these science things. And to make a very long story short, when it got time to graduate, I had absolutely no plan. And I'm one of the few people who would tell a story and you'll hear doctors say, well, I always knew from day one I knew nothing about that. Except I didn't want to, but it is what was
never
there.
Say never. That's the lesson in that.
That would have been, I learned that the hard way. And so when you don't have a plan, what's the saying? He who fails to plan plans to fail. I didn't have one, and I hate to, you know, won't sound cocky, but fell back into that because that's what the path I was on. So I kind of fell into med school, and so picking a path for people who don't know, you go to college, you do your 4 years, then you do 4 years of medical school. So every doctor in every field has done the same basic thing. You kind of pick what you want to do. And I didn't want to do any of it. I didn't like I had friends and classmates who were gung-ho about orthopedics or gung-ho about this. And I just knew that I didn't want to do anything. And so until about my second or third year, we had a child psychiatrist who transferred from Cincinnati, Dr. Bush. And at the time, I was involved with mentoring a lot of youth in the Nashville area. One particular group that was really interesting, the Lost Boys of Sudan. I don't know if you're familiar
with
the history.
I'm familiar with them,
are you?
Yes.
So for those who don't
know. They
did
a big document. There's been a lot of documentaries on that group.
So for people who don't know, this was a group of children who faced a huge amount of trauma, as there were a lot of atrocities in the Sudan, and these children, something like 10,000, walked from Sudanese to Kenya and lost their parents, and a lot of children ended up having to take their sisters and brothers, and when they made it to Kenya, a lot of them migrated. It was a huge population there. And so Dr. Bush was starting a clinic there, and I was involved with student government at the time, and so what she asked was for volunteers to do some screening. You know, we'll screen for depression, we'll screen for PTSD, those type of things. And as the student body president at the time, I said, okay, I'll get you some volunteers. And so lo and behold, I recruited about 10, 15 medical students to go do these. But the day to show up, it was me. Yay. And so I ended up doing a lot of those assessments by myself because I, you know, had overextended myself. But I really, really enjoyed it.
You connected with the kids.
I did. I've always been a mentor. I really credit mentors for my involvement and success, even when I was having, I guess what we would call behavioral problems. I had somebody, a mentor, say, you know, sit down. You're too smart to be acting that stupid. One statement, one very simple statement, but it stuck with me. And that, to me, showed the power of involvement. I didn't, you know, this gentleman didn't know that he was saying something profound to me. I had always made good grades. I had always been those type of things, except my mouth was getting me in a lot of trouble. But one person told me that it made me stop and have faith in myself. And so I've always wanted to give back. So this very long story about the child psychiatry thing. I was so naive at the time. I didn't know you had to do psychiatry general to do child psychiatry. I was going to be a neurosurgeon. I wanted to be in the MD PhD program and be Ben Carson and think big, and I heard him speak, and that's what I wanted to do. So I've always been fascinated with the brain and neurophysiology, but then having to do those assessments, and to be honest with you, when I was in medical school, I didn't really believe, like a lot of us, in the mental health and what that entailed.
It's complicated.
And it is, and oh, you just need this, and I didn't understand. But after that, I fell in love with it, and it lets me do a lot of what I like. I like to be, I like to, you know, the neurophysiology, and I guess we're going to talk about that a little bit, from the brain. It's an organ, and I think a lot of people don't think about this. But your brain is like every other part of your body. I always use this analogy. It's like diabetes. People understand that. It's the pancreas not making insulin or the body not being able to receive it. So some people are born with a pancreas that doesn't make, who that does not make insulin. And then some people have, for whatever, you know, obesity, whatever, you know, some hormonal problems, can't receive it. Doesn't matter. At the end of the day, you need insulin. And depression is the same way. Your brain makes and produces chemicals and things like that. So some people are born not producing as
much. Not imbalanced.
Right, right. And then some people are drained or depleted through stressors going on in their life. And doesn't matter how you get there, you're there. And so I think if we could think of our brain in the same way that we think about other organs in our body, we have a better understanding about, I don't even like the term mental health, what our health entails when these diseases of depression, anxiety, schizophrenia, bipolar. And so that's kind of what drew me into it. And so long story short, I ended up doing psychiatry. It kept me in the brain, and it let me do things that also is the psychology of it that
very
really
good
appeals to
well
me.
The topic we're talking about today is really timely. I was doing some of the research, and I found that 8 out of 10 Americans will experience stress at some point around the holiday. And a special group we're also going to be talking about is when the holidays roll around for the first time and people have experienced a loss of some kind, loss of a job, loss of a significant other, loss of, you know, move, a house, whatever. That's kind of complicates things. So let's just talk a little bit about what is going on that we're all crunched at this time and we're experiencing these internal and external kind of triggers.
8 out of 10, you say.
That's what I heard. Do you agree with that?
I want to know what those other two people are doing.
Yeah, there you go. Well, maybe you know. Tell us.
You know, it does not surprise me. The holidays are, it's a time where we have a lot of pressure externally for what we feel we're supposed to be doing. We talked about Black Friday and gifts and all these things. It's a tremendous amount of pressure to
financial
perform.
Pressure, family interaction pressure, all kinds of things.
It is. And so some of these things are external pressures of which we kind of place ourselves in our mentality about what we're supposed to be doing during these holidays. What are we going to have to do? And then there are other like life environmental stressors going on. You mentioned people dealing with grief as a time where we're supposed to be around family, and there might be some family who's supposed to be there that's not around anymore. And that becomes something difficult to bear. And so you have all these things externally, and then internally, well, I think that fits along the lines of internal, just dealing with some of the grievances that this time evokes with our memories and with all our past interactions. So that's kind of a psychology part. Then biologically, I think there's a time that the winter is just a depressing time mm-hmm. of year. There's not as much
less daylight.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and you know that's important as far as the
metabolism. We're probably not as active in keeping up our routines, maybe, just our self-care, maybe.
This is true. Gets cold. We probably don't exercise as much. Probably our dieting shifts. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking about Thanksgiving for myself. Mm-hmm. But not only that, I think the lack of light, when you think about things as far as what we know about vitamin D's influence on our mood, our thyroid, you know, the sunlight helps produce melatonin, which is, you know, involved in the synthesis of serotonin and a lot of biological pathways that just fall short in the summer months as well. So, you know, there's a bit of biology and a bit of psychology, but I don't think either one of those things exist in a vacuum. Mm-hmm. It's going along the diabetes model, mm-hmm. what I was talking about.
So we've identified some of the triggers like economic pressure mm-hmm. and family and all those kind of things. But what are some of the strategies that people can use with dealing with the stress part?
Know thyself mm-hmm. would be the first thing, is to pay attention. From the biology part, if you know this is a season that you always just get in the funk or get depressed. And we're talking, you know, periods of 3 to 4 days of persistent depression, not wanting to do things you like to do, not being able to enjoy it. And you know this tends to happen, and it tends to be a funk that you stay in throughout the whole season. Then you really want to talk to your doctor about seasonal affective disorders. Mm-hmm. Other things, knowing yourself, why I say these things don't exist in a vacuum. If you know this is a time where you tend to get sad or ruminative about losses or griefs, to go ahead and be proactive in planning how you're going to deal with that.
So let's dive into that right there. That's a good point. We were talking about that planning for the show, mm-hmm. How planning ahead, especially if you've had a loss, planning and thinking ahead and staying positive can kind of help. Let's specifically talk about if you've lost a loved one and it's the holiday season or experienced a loss.
Mm-hmm. I think that's one of the things that's universal, I think, in a human experience is having to deal with this at some point in time, in some form or fashion, whatever severity. And to be proactive, and let's just talk about loss as far as grieving someone who's passed. I think one of the things that we can think about is the perspective about what that means when we lose someone. And that's the thing that I think people struggle with, is the grief and feeling burdened. I think that if we could go ahead and know that that's coming, we can plan to say we're going to limit that amount of time that we're going to spend in mourning and think about more of a celebration, mm-hmm. a celebratory process. I've had thinking of a patient of mine, this is an adult patient who lost his wife very, very close to a holiday, and didn't happen to be Christmas. But around that time, always would get depressed. His depression, his way of coping with it would be to drink. And drank very heavily to the point where, you know, this man was gainfully employed. He always lost his job around this holiday mm-hmm. Because that's where he would go on these binges. And what would happen is he get to ruminate, he get to thinking about all the things he's lost in this. And we sat down at one point and said, you know, tell me about her. And he gave me all these wonderful stories about how funny she was and how she liked to dress and all the closets he had to keep building in the house and all these things that just brought light to his eye. And I said, you know, these memories are yours. They can't be taken from you. Why doesn't your mind go there mm-hmm. when it's hard?
Why don't you remember more positive than the sadness?
You think about what you lost and not what you had during these times. So we came up with having a ritual around the time, and what happens periodically, he'll light a candle, and he'll reflect about how hurt, because you have to give that voice. You have to acknowledge that within yourself mm-hmm. that you are experiencing pain, or else you'll scapegoat it. Mm-hmm. And what he would do is he would blame, you know, what was going on in his work. He would blame, you know, other things in his life, and it would scapegoat these problems as a way of avoiding and not addressing that he's really, really hurting. And then so there is reflection, and he'd set a time, and at the end of the time, he'd blow out the candle, and he'd watch the smoke. Mm-hmm. And then when the smoke evaded, and sometimes it's, you know, anybody's ever blown out a candle, it might mm-hmm. be a half hour to an hour sometimes. Mm-hmm. But that after that,
So limiting his time. He went on to more positive things.
He did.
So and he then, acknowledged it and mm-hmm. then went on to positive and limit the time that he spent wallowing.
And for that, he helped. And, you know, the other thing I want to point out is as you hear people describing what works for them, it's so personal. Mm-hmm. And that's the benefit of having a counselor and a therapist, because you have to figure out what works for you. Guilty pleasure, I like to watch a lot of TV shows and mental health shows, and then you see people give a whole lot of advice, and then somebody will say, well, I did this thing on Dr. Oz, or I did this thing on Oprah, and it didn't work. I say, well, let's talk about you. Mm-hmm. And so that's the one thing we're saying, being proactive, is to maybe speak with a counselor, speak with a therapist, and work out what's going to be a benefit for you. These are tailor-made solutions for you. What worked for this man may not work for the next man, or it may work for you. But the point of it will work across the board. I wholeheartedly believe that if you find a way to focus on the celebration of life and not the loss of it, that you will shift that perspective, and it goes from mourning to celebrating. Mm-hmm. And think about yourself. When you passed, you don't want somebody that you left, that you loved, that you cared about mm-hmm. hurting mm-hmm. in pain. That's not a legacy you want to leave. And so think about that for yourself, how you would want to be viewed if you weren't here. Mm-hmm. You don't want to be celebrated. I don't want people to tell a joke about me mm-hmm. or a good story about me, or maybe even not so good, because I am human and not everything is positive. Mm-hmm. But I want them to remember me whole. Mm-hmm. And that will help you to shift the focus into what you lost and to celebrate what you have, mm-hmm. because you don't lose those things, especially mm-hmm. with memories. Mm-hmm. They're yours.
What about the family members? So it sounds like what the advice you're giving us, limiting the time, mm-hmm. acknowledging the feelings and focusing on the more celebratory part of life and the memories that you created, might even be good advice for supporting someone. Do you have any other thoughts about that? So if I'm a family member or a friend, mm-hmm. and I'm supporting somebody through this first holiday season that they're experiencing a loss, how can I help?
Two things come to mind. I think I said earlier, know thyself, know thy friend. Mm-hmm. If you notice these signs and symptoms, if you notice, you know, you're extending an invitation, and normally you would take it, Tanya, but now you won't. If you're noticing that, you know, hygiene, grooming, all these things are starting to slip, these are signs of depression. And those things you might want to help make aware, make mm-hmm. your friend aware, make your loved one aware that this is going on. Denial is very strong. And like I said, we will tend to scapegoat these things to attribute them to other events and other things. Mm-hmm. And say, you know, Tanya, maybe right now I think that you're letting this fall aside, that the house is getting a little junky. Maybe you're a little sad. Mm-hmm. Open-ended. Mm-hmm. Let people stop and
just kind
and
of acknowledge.
Reflect.
Yeah, just mm-hmm. kind of make them aware and then right. acknowledge. Yeah, what you see.
And then you can help better guide, because if I tell you, hey, you're depressed, you know, the
self-defense is going to kick in.
Very much so, very much so. And so, you know, being supportive is just lending your time mm-hmm. and being empathetic to what somebody's going through. And then, you know, I always say guide them to where the help is, if you know this is predictable for a person, but to be aware. And while we're talking about depression, in my field, I always want to stop and mention suicide, because I think that is one of the things that, because I work with youth and it's really on the rise, the prevalence and things like that, is to be aware of some of those warning signs. We're talking about serious depression. All depression series. We're talking about the severity of that's coming up. If someone's starting to make hints that they're not going to be there, they want to shift their will, they want to start giving away their possessions. You notice little signs like that. You know, suicide is not a bad word. It's not a scary word. I think people feel like if you ask, are you feeling suicidal, or are you thinking about killing yourself, you put the idea in your head, in their head, or you give a suggestion.
You put them over the edge.
Right. Mm-hmm. But studies have shown that if you ask, people will tell you. Hmm. And so that's a statistic that I think I didn't know till I knew. And so that shouldn't be a taboo word when you're dealing with somebody, especially if they're close enough to admit to you that they're depressed. Well, you know, have you thought about how far that'll go? Or mm-hmm. I noticed these things. I just wanted to know, are you okay? Are you thinking about hurting yourself or killing yourself? Because that is often the saving point. We have a lot of rating scales, a lot of surveys and things to try to predict, you know, whether somebody's high risk, but it doesn't pan out that you will be able to pinpoint a person. And so the best way is to ask and not fear that you're going to put that idea in your head.
Yeah, you gave us some good language for that. Mm-hmm. Is suicide up over the holidays generally? More than in another time of year or not really?
The winter time, definitely. You know, to pinpoint it, so I guess because the winter correlates with the holidays, yes, I believe that statistic is a bit higher than in the summer months. But that will be interesting to see between November, December specifically.
If it was up or not. That's interesting. Well, I also want to talk about another special group, and that's, I know you have your background heavily with children and adolescents. What kind of stressors, you know, we put a lot on our kids. I mean, they're excited about holidays, but they're also out of their routine. They're being shuffled around. They have the stress of trying to get exams done before school, and their bedtimes aren't the same. Their eating isn't the same. So what do you see with kids and teens during this time of year, stress for them specifically?
Honestly, the same thing I see with adults.
Okay.
I think one thing that we lose sight of is that children are just little people, and they have their own internal mechanisms just like we do. They have their own stressors, but they're at a disadvantage because they are not in the same hierarchy, the same level, so to speak. So I always tell children they have a harder time communicating with adults because it's not an even playing field. As far as, you know, negotiating, it has to be artful when you're the teenager, the child. But in terms of depression, in terms of things like that, I think they go through the same thing. Stressors on the family, as much as we try to keep our children innocent and blind to those things, they are aware. It's palpable in some environments. And so the same thing I would say that we were saying a minute ago as far as just being able to ask. You're right, the children have their own worlds, their own internal mechanisms. And but they are. They're just little people, and they have their own feelings. And I think even with my five-year-old sometimes, I kind of look at him and go, well, you know, I'm mad, Daddy. And I go, well, you shouldn't really be mad about that. Look at all these things you have. And instead of going, so what are you mad about, buddy? And so that's one of the things about just empathy that we extend to another person our age. We have to extend to our children and ask about their internal worlds. It is, you know, I've been paying attention a lot to the media, and a lot is going on about bullying and about things going on in the school system. And I think these things are, I'm glad that they have attention being brought to them. But with some different nuances in the way it's spread, I think these things are how they've always been. It's always been bullying. It's always been, you know, they're dealing with it in different ways. And so I think as adults, we can empathize with it because we've been through those things in some form or fashion. We can't forget that and how it feels, because once we get to a different vantage point, and that's what hindsight goes. So you go, oh, it's not that bad, Billy, buck up. But, you know, if you remember when you were back there and that was happening to you,
it was not
that easy then. And so that's just empathy. I think that's the, you know, if we had to pick one word, that's going to be the answer all the way down through all the questions, all the topics. And empathy is the ability not to feel sorry for, but to say, you know, I know what a mile in your shoes might feel like. Tell me about it. I always use this analogy with my patients. If you stub your toe on that door, I could say that probably wouldn't hurt me. But that's not my toe. That's your toe. I can't tell you how to feel about it. And if that's empathy, and if you invest the desire and the interest in somebody to figure that out, they will open up and share with you. But if I tell you, walk it off, that shouldn't hurt that bad, you're going to shut down.
So keep it open. Keep it open-ended. That's a good tip. I also want to talk a little bit about, we're now halfway through the holidays. Christmas is over. New Year's is coming. And people sometimes experience a little holiday blues. So we have this big hype. We have expectations of what things will be. The morning after comes, and it's like, oh, my gosh, now what? So any tips about holiday blues? And I'm also interested, you brought up a little earlier, there's a difference between a 3 to 5 day funk and and not coming out of things. So what's a good time period? Is it the 3 to 5 day? I mean, what are some markers that help us distinguish where when we're staying somewhere and when it should have been over and we should have been dealing with that?
You know, I think that's different in different situations. And anybody that's followed psychiatry and psychology knows that even with bereavement and grief, we used to talk about the stages and what is
anger,
normal
denial,
grief.
Right.
You're right. But also in bereavement, diagnostically, what is, you know, a traditional amount of time for grief versus complicated grief versus mm-hmm. not complicated grief versus, you know, depending on what symptoms you're mm-hmm. having. And, you know, a lot of that nomenclature is changing because we realize that people deal with things as they're going to deal with them. It's more about the severity. And so I think, you know, if you're noticing, I would say, you know, a week in which your symptoms are so severe, they're impeding your daily activities, you know, anhedonia, which is the giving up of things that you used to find pleasurable, isolating, changes in your sleep pattern, oversleeping during the day, having insomnia during the night, losing your appetite, and these things are being persistent for more than a week, you should talk to somebody. Mm-hmm. And if you're noticing those things about people, that's what, you know thyself, know thy friend, then that's when you should bring it to their attention and say, hey, you know, I notice these things. How are you feeling? And they, if they voice to you, this is what's going on. Okay, then, you know, what should we do about it? Or how can I help? Mm-hmm. Because if you ask, they'll tell you. And so the holiday blues, I think, are a specific way of saying something that's going on all year with people. And it is a lot of hype. And when you said that the disappointment, I was thinking of a kid opening up the presents and it's an Xbox and not a PlayStation. When you said let down, but no, sometimes it's more than that, you know, for a lot of people, depending on the, stressors in their lives. And there's no, one size fit all answer other than if you notice these things about people, if you notice these symptoms about yourself, then be proactive. The same as any other condition. Mm-hmm. If we're talking about heart pain, if mm-hmm. we're talking about a stroke, and we talk about...
You don't keep chest pain for weeks and weeks. You go see somebody, right?
Right.
Right.
That's my point.
Yep. What about, are there resources that you can think of? Like you mentioned, you know, if you do notice something, if you mm-hmm. do make people aware, like a suicide hotline, or mm-hmm. Where do people actually go for help? We're going to talk about your specific practice at the end, but are there... I mean, if I don't know somebody, but I notice something, what would mm-hmm. I do to help them?
There are a couple, and I'm trying to think of the numbers. There's a suicide, I think it's 1-800-233-TALK. I'd have to Google it to make sure, but they're definitely, then in the Atlanta area, they're county specific. So okay. you can go online and see, and they're 24 hours, somebody okay. to just speak with, crisis centers. Your family physician, mm-hmm. If you have a close relationship with them, can point you in the right way. They'll have relationships with specialists. Depending on where you feel you need to start, mm-hmm. you know, the first thing to do would be to open up and speak with somebody mm-hmm. and to acknowledge it. If it is to the point that you're really feeling you're in imminent harm of hurting yourself, you're to that point, physicians would consider that an emergency. You can go mm-hmm. to an emergency room and mm-hmm. say, I'm having these thoughts of killing myself, and mm-hmm. someone will assist you. Mm-hmm. Someone will make sure that you're in a safe place. Mm-hmm. The first thing is to be aware. Statistically, men, I'm speaking to you a little bit, we tend to be more lethal in suicide attempts. And so that is a case where if you know you're close to go get help. Women, more prevalent, more frequent. If you know you have a history of these things, then if you feel the urge, if you feel these things coming on, don't be shy. That's what we do in the healthcare field. It's another medical condition to me, just as if you sprained your foot.
Mm-hmm. Very good. So get professional help. Don't be hesitant. That's the message there.
Proactivity.
Right. Well, no matter what advice we give and no matter what statistics we put out, a lot of the listeners that are out there listening to us will remember stories. Can you think of any, without patient names, stories around holiday stress, holiday grief and loss where mm-hmm. you got involved and made a difference or took a patient from A to B and mm-hmm. kept them going?
Right. Well, I mentioned one earlier with that man. That one always sticks to my heart because of that routine, that ritual that, mm-hmm. that he came up with.
Mm-hmm.
Also, in the child population, I work a lot of community mental health outside of my private practice. And I remember a family of three siblings that were removed from their home the day of Christmas. And their age range were somewhere around 14 all the way down to maybe about 5 or 6. This was about their third or fourth placement. with a family member before they entered into the foster care system, and all kind of behavioral problems out of the children. And you know, we could have a whole nother show mm-hmm. about foster care mm-hmm. and going in and out of the system. But, you know, when your world is constantly being destabilized, moved from place to place, and you're someplace, and this was particularly hard because they were bonding with the care system they were, but one of the siblings was acting out a little bit more than the other, and basically the foster parents couldn't take care of them, so they all had to go. And they could not be placed together. And I just remember that was a really, really, really hard thing to be a part of mm-hmm. as their mental health provider, mm-hmm. To see them having to be split. Mm-hmm. One out of the city. This was when I was in Alabama. One out of the city and two within the city. Mm-hmm. And one thing we were able to do was work with Ronald McDonald House mm-hmm. and get them a week or two placement there so they could be together through the holidays. Mm-hmm. And that made a very, very bad situation mm-hmm. not as bad. Mm-hmm. But so that's kind of on the hard end. And then, like I said, I get a lot of referrals around the time for just blues. Am I depressed? Is this what's going on? You talk to people and they're real life stressors that don't exist in a vacuum, but we start to scapegoat into other things. And this, one of the great things about being a therapist is you get this internal insight about just humanity. And mm-hmm. And one of the things that I've noticed is that if you can shift perspective about how you view a situation, then the situation actually changes for you. Think about it like the glasses you're wearing. Mm-hmm. You're looking down at the paper and you see it's white as you write. But if I were to take the lens out of it and, mm-hmm. and give you some red ones and say, Tanya, look down at the paper, mm-hmm. what color is it? Mm-hmm. It's
be
red.
Different.
It's mm-hmm. red. Same thing, shift, colors, mm-hmm. glasses,
our
paper
filters.
Shifts,
yeah.
Right?
Change our filters.
But our lives are the same way. And which we perceive it changes, our reality changes based mm-hmm. on our perspective. So if we can do things that help shift our perspective, then the actual situation changes along with it.
Mm-hmm. That's good advice. Mm-hmm. You mentioned your, I'd like to hear a little bit more about your mentoring. I know you're very still involved in mentoring and bringing people up behind you mm-hmm. and being available.
Let's see. I did a lot more. I'm actually kind of new to the Atlanta area. I've been here about 3 years, mm-hmm. and so I haven't been able to get as reestablished with that outside of, you know, church and, mm-hmm. and things like that. But previously, I did a lot through my college fraternity, Kappa Alpha Psi fraternity, and we were able to. They have mentoring groups that you can mm-hmm. get involved with, and but they're autonomous or not connected. I don't mm-hmm. know the word I'm looking for there. And so, and then I started off in high school doing Big Brothers, Little Sisters. And then the group I created in Birmingham, Alabama, we worked with a lot of high school children there, mostly all men, all young boys, high school age, ninth through high school. And so that was about 6 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I social media is great. I get to keep up with these guys. Mm-hmm. I see them on Facebook. They tweet me. Mm-hmm. I had to learn what that was. Mm-hmm. and as of now, we've had guys who are graduating college, who are entering professional careers, who've gone on to the military, who had very, very different trajectories. You know, mm-hmm. I had a Facebook post a couple of months ago for a young man who went into the military. Marines, mm-hmm. and I visit this young man in detention, and he said, "You know, Doc, I was not going to."
No, he's
place.
Very disciplined. Talk about a shift in perspective.
Right, right, and so, you know, with the mentoring thing, you know, people talk about crime, they talk about poverty, and they always say, you know, and it always kind of gets into a discussion about the safety nets in society and so forth, of whether it's making a difference or not, and whether they do or not. Statistically, I could tell you yay or nay, depending on what side you want to argue on. Mm-hmm. I like that about statistics. But one thing that is, if you can make an impact in somebody's life and teach them that if you really, truly feel impacted, to impact another person, mm-hmm. then it's like fire. Once it's kindled, mm-hmm. it spreads. Mm-hmm. And so I saw this in Birmingham, and you know, we started with 15 young guys, two high schools, and when I left in 2010, it was somewhere close to 60 in all the high schools in Metro Birmingham, mm-hmm. some in Bessemer, and it made a difference. And those guys, hopefully, now that, you know, some of these guys in their professional careers are going back and doing the same thing, and I think that has the most impact of mm-hmm. if we were speaking earlier about, you know, when you give a dollar to a charity, you know, it's the charity mm-hmm. getting 90 cents versus, you know, two mm-hmm. pennies. Mm-hmm. You know, what's the yield? You know, mm-hmm. how much yield am I making? If you give your time and your effort, it's always 100% yield. Mm-hmm. I think the kids that I work with respected the fact that I came to the school more so than, you know, the whatever money mm-hmm. when we did a Toys for Tots or we collected things from mm-hmm. them, it was the fact that, you know, you showed up mm-hmm. and you delivered it by hand. They didn't care what was in it, mm-hmm. but you know they were there. Mm-hmm. Same thing if they acted up. Mm-hmm. I was at the school then mm-hmm. and the other advisors that worked with me there. That's one of the reasons one of the ways to affect the change is you have to become involved. It doesn't mean enough to you to sacrifice mm-hmm. the time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, very good. Well, believe it or not, we're to the end of our time. But before we go, I'd like to see if you have just any final tips. If people don't remember anything else about what we talked about, what's the top one, two, or three things that they can take away from our discussion to help them with the holiday sadness mm-hmm. or stress or recovery from that?
The first is empathy. Mm-hmm. If you notice somebody's going through something, if you're suspicious, the first thing is to ask yourself, you know, what must that be like? And then next thing would be to ask. People will tell you if you ask. And then that way you can collaboratively help, you know, guide people to help. But those are the two things, empathy. In part, that is kind of the basis of the seasons, isn't it? Mm-hmm. It's about togetherness. It's about family, regardless of your religious beliefs. The season, what we've mm-hmm. come to embrace this as a country, is a season about caring. Mm-hmm. But you can't do that without empathy. If mm-hmm. you can't look at the person you have nothing in common with and figure out, what do I have? Mm-hmm. Because it's there. There's a common thread to all humanity in that mm-hmm. way. And so the take-home message is to be empathetic, which is different than sympathy. It's understanding of another person and what they're going through. And ask. If you are suspicious, if you have a high level of concern, it's not going to push somebody over the edge. It's not going to put a thought in their head that wasn't already there to begin with. Ask. And then open-ended. And then do something with what you're given.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Good tips. And I also want to leave the listeners a little bit about your practice and how to reach you.
Sure. So I'm part of Georgia Behavioral Health Professional Systems. We have offices in Sandy Springs, Marietta, Medina, Smyrna. Hope I'm not forgetting mm-hmm. any. I work at the Smyrna branch, and we have a website, is georgiahealthprofessionals.com. I only know the number to my branch, which is 770-431-2354, because I have mm-hmm. to call it a lot. And we take most insurances. So we have counselors, therapists, psychiatrists at each branch mm-hmm. Available for testing, those type of things. So that's my private practice, and also since they allowed me to be here, I want to mention some of the community mental health centers, Families First Community Service, and ACE Community Supports, where I do a lot of community mental health, and that's a passion of mine. I know it's a job, but, you know, my practice is a job, but it's a really passion of mine to work in community health. So, and I want to say thank you because they let me come here and take a really, really long lunch break to speak with you.
Very good. And we've enjoyed having you. We'll look forward to having you come back at another time. And for all of you out there, again, Happy New Year. We look forward to continuing to tune in and listen with you weekly. Also, please tune in to our sponsor site, www.healthgate.com, to see how some of your healthcare needs might be. Find resources there. Have a great holiday, and we'll talk to you soon. Thanks for tuning in.
The Doctor's Roundtable has been a production brought to you by HealthGate and Business Radio X. HealthGate is a groundbreaking website where board-certified doctors and specialists offer savings on out-of-pocket healthcare costs. For more information about HealthGate, please visit www.healthgate.com or call 404-692-5377. We hope you tune in next week, and thank you for listening.